Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 218 tonight. We're going to be discussing, well, this will actually be part 4.3 of Mysteries of Metaphysics, and we'll be discussing ancient Greece and the evolution of from the megalithic sites of Mycenae all the way to the Greek temples. So we did do, I think, an episode on this as part of our Ancient Greece series, which we didn't finish, and we'll get back to that probably at some point here in the near future. But yeah, we're just jumping right back into it. Before we get started, we do have a merch store now. So you can either head on over to our website at mindescapepodcast.com. There is a merch link there. We've got shirts, mugs, hoodies, yeah, everything. Some good designs we've got going on now, too, so go check that out. We are still doing a giveaway, too, so if anybody is interested, they can go look at that shirt right there. That's the shirt we've got that we're going to give away at the end of the month.
I might buy one.
Yeah. Maurice might buy one of his own that he already bought. So, yeah, if you want to enter to win that shirt, all you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, and then send it to our email at mindescapepodcast@gmail.com. And we will enter you in to win. Also, if you're interested, go to patreon.com/mindescapepodcast for just $2 a month. You'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. Bunch of awesome stuff up there lately. We've got one with Laura from the megalith hunter on Malta, you know, talking about all the stuff on Malta, the megalithic sites. I put one up there with Rick Strassman. We've got one with our continuation of our What Was Soma episode with Matthew Clark. Who else? Laird Scranton. I just recently put one up there. I mean, we've got tons of good stuff. And there's tons of ones that we've done over the last few years as well. So go check that out. Also, before we get started, head on over to indrasweb.org. This is a social media platform we created to connect open minds. It is not in the App Store yet, but if you're interested, it is a platform. You can go on there, set up a profile, and start speculating, hypothesizing, theorizing, all that wonderful stuff. And yeah, how are you, Maurice?
I'm doing well. How are you, my man?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Also, just a side note, my wife and I will be expecting our first child soon, so we're going to pre-record a bunch of episodes for the next couple months. We'll just slowly trickle them out. So if we're not live for a little bit, that's why.
We got to make a sure baby on board.
There is baby merch, too, in the merch store. So go
there,
check
it out. There
you go. And yeah, tonight we are going to do a slideshow episode. So if you're listening on one of the audio platforms and you haven't already, please check out our YouTube channel, subscribe, you know, leave us a like. We really appreciate that. And yeah, if you are watching, here we go. All right. That's a little tease here. I've got the Giza Plateau, but we're really going to be talking about ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Here's some terminology just before we get started. Acropolis, it's a site, city, or settlement built on top of elevated ground. Cyclopean is a pre-classical style of Greek masonry that is that utilizes irregular massive blocks. Within the Greek architecture pantheon, you have Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian styles, which are orders of classical Greek architecture. And Mycenaean, it's a period of ancient Greece that was the last phase of its Bronze Age. It spanned from 1600 to 1100 BC. Also, if you're interested, we did make like a short, kind of like a video, kind of different than all, obviously, our podcast episodes. It's called The Origins of Ancient Greece. We talk about like Daskalia, which is this island off the coast in the Cyclades. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. So if you're interested in this topic, it kind of gives a little precursor to all the stuff we're going to be discussing. So go check that out. All right. So this kind of goes in chronological order. So we'll just go through like the evolution of some of the megalithic sites and structures, all the way to some of the later Greek temples. So, Delos is a UNESCO heritage site. It has significant cultural importance. It is a sacred site in regards to archaeology and mythology. There are stone huts on the island that suggest it has been inhabited since the 3rd millennium BC. Thucydides said that the original inhabitants were the Charon pirates from the Anatolia region of Turkey. King Minos is said to have expelled all of them all to Crete. It is the birthplace of the twin gods Apollo and Artemis. So in terms of Greece and the stretch, you know, there's going to be a lot of sites that are in Western Turkey. You know, you have the where you get a lot of the Ionian stuff all the way over to Italy, and you have, like, you know, southern Italy and Sicily and all the stuff over there. So that's how big kind of the Greek Empire stretched. And yeah, it's got a lot of stuff there. So,
oh yeah.
Some of the Delos landmarks are the Minoan Fountain, the Terrace of the Lions, the Temple of the Delians, the Sacred Lake, which is now dried out, the Oikos of the Naxians, the Doric Temple of Isis, the Temple of Hera, the House of Dolphins, the House of Dionysius, and the Delos Synagogue. The House of Dolphins, that actually sounds like something from the Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, it does.
Do you remember any of this stuff, or any of, you know, we did go over a lot of this stuff before. Actually, some of these are the exact same slides.
Yeah, the names are starting to trigger some concepts, but for me, I got to go over things a couple of times to remember them. I don't have that memory like you do.
So yeah, this is, a lot of these slides are from the slideshow from our Ancient Greece Megalithic Structures and Temples episode that we did. But that was, I think, episode like 110 or something. So it was a long time
ago. Long time ago.
Let's see here. There's another picture of Delos.
We got to go on a big field trip one time, though. Yeah. This would be amazing.
We'll go on this entire, we're gonna recreate this the slideshow with us standing in front of each structure. So here we have, a lot of people don't know there's pyramids in Greece. They're not obviously as massive as the Giza pyramids or anything found in South America, but they're there nonetheless. This is the Pyramid of Helenikon. So the pyramid at Helenikon, there is controversy surrounding the dating of this structure. Mainstream archaeologists suggest it was built sometime around the 4th or the 5th century BC as a tomb for the soldiers who fought for the throne of Argos. Thermoluminescence dating of the surface of the megalithic stones suggests a date of 2000 to 2500 BC. This would date it to roughly the time of the construction of the Great Pyramids of Giza, or the Great Pyramid of Giza. Ceramic shards were dated from 3000 to 200 BC, so there's a pretty big gap there. Uh-huh. The entrance corridor aligns with the Orion's Belt from 2000 to 2400 BC, and a new method for dating stone was applied and suggested date somewhere between the 4th and the 3rd millennium BC. This was, however, discredited by archaeologists. No surprise, LOL. I must have put that in there a long time ago. So in terms of when this was actually built, I've heard lots of different things, as I just mentioned. I'd say the safe bet would be the 4th or the 5th century BC, but with all these things, it's like, who knows exactly?
Yeah, we don't want to be safe anymore. We got to go out there.
Maurice wants to push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, you're darn right.
Here's the Pyramid of Helenikon from a different angle. As you can see, it's been crumbled in. I'd say it's only got the bottom third of it, or maybe even half. Like, I would say between a third and a half left. So here's the picture from the inside of it looking out. Again, if you are listening, this is a slideshow episode, so please check us out on YouTube. However, I will try and make it as interesting as possible if you are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we move on. Here's the Dragon House at Mount Ochi. No dating, suggested dating information, or speculation of the builders. No reference by ancient text or historians. It says from 2002 to 2004, the astrophysics department at the University of Athens made connections to Sirius, dating it to 1100 BC. I mean, if you look at it, that looks... I mean, it looks like it's pretty precisely put together. I mean, it doesn't really look like there's any gaps. I can't really tell if there's any mortar in between those blocks or if they're just so tightly put together. It's hard to tell. But they do look perfectly put together, almost like somebody was playing Tetris.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now we get to Mycenae, the Mycenaean sites of Mycenaean tyrants. The Mycenaean period of ancient Greece was the last phase of its Bronze Age. It spanned from 1600 to 1100 BC. Mycenae was the major fixture of Greek civilization. It was the first advanced civilization of Greece's mainland. In roughly 1350 BC, the citadel at Mycenae had an estimated population of 30,000 people. Mycenae is an Acropolis site at 900 feet above sea level. There are traces of Neolithic activity at Mycenae. In Greek mythology, Mycenae was founded by Perseus, which that's pretty interesting. Tyrin's Golden Years, which is the other site from this time period. The Tyrin's Golden Years were from 1200 to 1400 BC. Tyrin's has cyclopean tunnels and masonry. Heinrich Schliemann excavated the site. Ancient traditions say Cyclops built the walls since he was a giant and he's the only one that could lift those stones. Obviously, we know humans did it, but that's interesting. Maybe there was just some guy named Cyclops, just some massive guy.
Yeah, this is like the...
like the mountain.
The old comics skits we've been writing.
This is the Megaron Foundation at Mycenae. As you can see, there's just a bunch of foundations and rubble there. So, pretty interesting, but not really much to look at.
Or actually, what if Cyclops was like an organization, you know, of the best builders, and they thought it was one guy's name?
Well, I know there's some speculation, too. When they found woolly mammoth skulls, it looks like there's one big eye hole in front of their skull. So there was speculation that that might have been like a person skull, but obviously we know mastodons and woolly mammoths and stuff were just...
That's obviously been embedded into their psyche, because that's like what Hercules, he fights the Cyclops.
Well, and you also have to go like think about like ancient Greece too. I think a lot of speculation on some of these gods. They found like hippo bones and certain bones, and I think that some of the speculation on what these gods were and who they were based on finding some of these weird bones and not necessarily putting two and two together in terms of these were animals and not something else.
Right.
So, I mean, we've talked about the whole entheogen psychedelic component too on the idea of like metaphysics and gods and stuff too. But I think it's fun to,
that's a good
speculate on other aspects as well.
Uh huh.
So here we have the Royal Graves Circle A. It's from the 16th century BC. This is at Mycenae. Let's see here. So you can see it's that main, it almost looks like a pool foundation or something.
Yeah.
Let's see here. This is one of the more interesting ones. I like this. The Lion's Gate or the Lion Gate. It's the main entrance to the Citadel of Mycenae. It was built in 1250 BC. It's the only existing monumental Mycenaean sculpture, which, as you can see, that's pretty ornamental above the lintel of the doorway. The megalithic cyclopean masonry kind of goes around there, as you can see. That doesn't look as crude as other cyclopean walls, though. It looks like it's a little bit more, they fit it together a little bit better. The lion sculpture resembles imagery found at Knossos, which was would be one of the Minoan sites. So that's kind of interesting. And there is obviously speculation that the Minoans might have been, along with the obviously the Mycenaeans, were the precursor to Greek civilization.
Well, I'm sure there's always speculation on
most of this stuff. Well, there's tons of crossover between all this stuff too, especially being in such close vicinity of one another. So, okay, here we go. This is the tomb of Clytemnestra. It is a Tholos-style tomb. It was built in 1250 BC for King Agamemnon's wife, who is Clytemnestra. So the interesting thing there is you can see, here, I'll go back. See the lion gate sculpture there at top of the lintel, that triangular shape sculpture. Now look at this tomb, and you can see a similar cutout. So did they have another lion style sculpture there before? I mean, that's something we've speculated on that ancient or the Origins of Ancient Greece movie that we made a long time ago. And then you go in and you can see it goes all the way through to the inside of the tomb. So, I mean, that's just my hypothesis, is there was some sort of sculpture similar to the Lion Gate, if not the same thing above there.
Yeah, and those structures would probably be quite the pretty penny for any kind of thieves or whatnot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Well, that'd be what the first thing that would be jacked, don't you think?
Well, I mean, it's not... I guess it depends on how valuable that stuff would be back then. I mean, if it's ornamental, I guess it has some value, but I mean, in terms of it being like similar to like jewels or gold or something like that, I don't think it would be as important.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's something to be jacked, you're always there. You're always there to bring it up though.
Yeah. I'm around. Why would it be gone? Did it crumble?
It was obviously taken out for some reason. Maybe a later group or, you know, I don't know. Maybe a later group of people decided that was something else, or maybe it was the logo or the crest of some other civilization or precursor or something, and they just didn't believe the same thing or weren't the mm-hmm. same group of people. Could be anything.
Yeah, I hear you.
I
guess my mind goes in a different direction.
But I mean, again, why? I guess the question would be why it looks very similar to the same thing at the Lion Gate, like above the lintel. Why would it be the same thing if there wasn't something there? I mean, that's
right.
A question you'd have to ask somebody who's an expert on this. But yeah, I don't know. That's just my hypothesis on the matter. Here you have the Cyclopean tunnels at Tiryns. Actually, you see very similar tunnels on Sardinia that were created by the Nuraghi people as well. So it's kind of interesting. Again, lots of crossover, similar region. Those are two different tunnels side by side, but they're very similar. This one, you can see kind of the stones towards the top. They are kind of crudely put together. So it's a better example of Cyclopean masonry, in my opinion. Let's see here. Here's a close-up of some Cyclopean masonry found at Tiryns. There's obviously some growth in between there. But again, not anything that's like super polished or put together, just kind of like crudely put together in a way that fits, where it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here is the tunnel at, I think it's called Eupolinos, the Eupolian aqueduct at Samos. It's 3,400 feet long. It was built in the 6th century BC, and it used to be an aqueduct, or it was used as an aqueduct. Okay, so now we make the crossover. So we were at some of the older, more megalithic stuff found in ancient Greece. And, I mean, I have no doubt that the Greeks probably took some pointers from the Egyptians. We know the later philosophers like Thales. You've got Thales, Plato, Socrates. All these people actually went to ancient Egypt at different points and learned from the Egyptians. But I bet you even previous to that, there was people going there and probably... getting pointers, maybe, you know, that's where those pyramids came from, or getting ideas like that. I don't know. Just,
uh-huh.
just a hypothesis. But yeah, now we get to the Greek architecture stuff. Here you see the columns. There's three different types of columns. This is the most basic. It's called the Doric. You can see it there. This is used in the Pantheon. Then you have the Ionic, which you see those little like curly Qs on each side. They curl in. Which is kind of interesting. I wonder where, if that's just a stylistic thing, because they do look like the spirals found on megalithic sites from Neolithic Europe. Even that Malta episode we just did with Laura, who's the megalith hunter. Some of those blocks have similar looking spirals, and you can find them at like Newgrange and stuff like that. But I don't even know if that's the same thing. That might just be some stylistic thing as opposed to some greater meaning.
Yeah.
And then we get to the most decorative one, which is the Corinthian, which, as you can see, yeah, they really dialed it in there. Very, very artistic.
Beautiful.
And then here you just have like the different styles. Here's just a diagram of the different styles and pillars, and then the architecture above that connects the temple to the pillars. Do you have any questions so far?
No, nothing yet.
Okay. Here's a diagram of the different parts. We don't have to go through it all, but you have the base or like the steps, which is just called the crepidoma, which would be, you know, if you remember the Easter Island, how they have the ahus, which sit below the moai, that would be like this temple's ahu. It's like the base or the platform. It's the crepidoma. And then you have the columns, and then above the column, you have the capital, and then it goes up. And then on the left or the other side, you have the diagram pointing to those three vertical bars, which would be the triglyphs. And yeah, at the top you have those, tympanons. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just some interesting stuff. It's just interesting to know what these things are called and that they're actually a thing and they're found at a lot of these sites. I don't think people go to Greece or, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that studied like art history or stuff like that. But if you didn't, I don't think a lot of people necessarily think about these things in that manner. Okay. The Acropolis of Athens. The Acropolis of Athens is the most famous and historic Acropolis in Greece. There is evidence that the people have been living there since the 4th millennium BC. The Acropolis's most popular sites are the Parthenon, the Erechtheion, the Temple of Athena at Nike, the Propylaea, and then in the 5th century BC, Pericles coordinated the construction of those sites. It also contains the Odeon, Herodotus, Atticus, the Theater of Dionysus, and the Eleusinion. And Xerxes destroyed most of everything and anything of significance in 480 BC. His dad, Darius the First, I mean, that's just what happened in the ancient world. People conquered each other, destroyed stuff. Darius the First, I think, won some battles, and then he died. And then Xerxes in 480 actually divvied out the punishment. And, I mean, I think that obviously 300's kind of fiction for the most part, but there was a group that fought off people on that Thermopylae pass, and that was real. So I mean, there is certain parts to that. I think that there is some truth. But Xerxes did destroy a lot of the temples, 480 BC. So we get to the Parthenon. This is probably one of the most famous temples, and it was built between 447 and 387 BC. It was built on the site of an older temple dedicated to Athena. It was considered to be the pinnacle of the Doric order. Again, the Doric is just the most basic, earliest version of the Greek pillars.
Hmm.
Here's another picture of the Parthenon. And it's beautiful. I mean, there's no,
yeah, it is.
There's no other way around it. I mean, you can look at this thing all day. I think ancient Greece is just, you
it's
know,
the pinnacle.
It's well, it's simplistic, but it's beautiful. And even though, you know, the Cyclades are very rocky and stuff, there's just like a rugged beauty to it too. It's hard to describe. Let's see here. Here's a picture. You can kind of see the Doric pillars and then the triglyphs above that there. Just a close up. Okay, this is the old Parthenon. As you can see, that's what those, the inner line, the darker lines are, the older Parthenon. Or the old Parthenon. Here's a picture, an older picture of a guy sitting on some of the foundation blocks. So you can look at those pictures and be like, oh, that's big. But then when you see that guy sit on the base of one of those blocks, you're like, oh, wow, those are pretty big.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some speculation, again, that some of the sites were built on older spots, which is like a common theme in the ancient world, that some of these megalithic structures were actually built on top of other previous megalithic structures or bases or something like that. So here you can kind of see like what a diagram of like the foundation and the base of it, how it cuts down like that and how it's, you know, it's structured under there.
That's some serious effort when.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, but back then, I mean, most of the effort, the architecture, the you know, just the people putting in that much time into this stuff. It's not like they probably had that much more to do with their time, but it is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called like Persian rubble. This is what you know, stuff that was left over from Xerxes coming through and destroying everything in 480 BC. So the old temple of Athena, it was built between 525 and 500 BC, located on the Acropolis in Athens. It was destroyed by Xerxes again in 480 BC. Below is a picture of the ruins in front of the Erechtheion. So you can see the foundations there, in the front. Any questions so far, Maurice? You've been kind of quiet for a Mike and Maurice episode.
I'm just taking it all in.
He's actually learning something here.
Yeah. Although I have to watch this three times.
We got to send you two. We got to have to send you to Greece to start taking some real pictures.
I know that a couple of these are a little dated.
No, a lot of them are dated. So again, an older picture just to get a perspective on the size of these things. Here's kind of like an artistic, I guess, picture or painting. I don't even know what you call it. Composition of what the old Acropolis used to look like.
Yeah, again, we don't really know how accurate this thing is, but
you have the Erechtheion here, depiction of it. And then here you have how everything used to be set up. So all the way to the right, you have the early temple of Athena, which is restored. You have the Erechtheion in the middle. And then it goes down there. You can see the slope. Here's just a different diagram and overhead view of the area, the old temple of Athena. Here's again another picture of the foundations of the old temple of Athena. Okay, so the temple of Athena, Nike on the Acropolis, it was built on an older site from the cult of Athena at Nike, and had occupied during the 6th century BC. It was destroyed by Xerxes in 480. Again, he destroyed most of Athens and other sites too. Even Naxos, I mean, he went through and he did some damage.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're interested, I created a composite, like almost like a image of the Portara at Naxos. So if you know what that is, we do have a shirt in our merchandise or our merch store online. I think I did a pretty good job. Maurice thought it was a real picture when I sent it to him.
So. Yeah, it's beautiful.
So go we check got, that this out. Guy's
turning into quite the artist.
I just looked at a bunch of different views, you know, and just kind of put this thing together on Illustrator. But it is a cool shirt. We call it the Mindscape Portal.
Oh yeah.
So the temple was finished in 420 BC, and it was demolished by the Turks. And
what does that say?
It was rebuilt in 1834. Okay. The Temple of the Olympian Zeus at Athens. Construction began in the 6th century BC by Athenian tyrants, but it was not completed until the 2nd century AD by Roman Emperor Hadrian, roughly 640 years later. It was built on an ancient outdoor sanctuary site dedicated to Zeus. It was destroyed in 267 AD by barbarians. So that one's just in the middle there of, like, huge residential area, pretty much.
Yeah, look at the city. Things have this flourished.
And then you have this beautiful ancient site right there in the middle.
Yeah, it's barely holding on, but it's nice that they appreciate it. And
yeah. Here's an older, I guess, picture or painting. I guess it's an illustration of it. You can kind of see what it used to look like before all the modernization of the civilization around it came into, mm-hmm. came to fruition. This one actually looks like a picture. And actually, it looks like something's on the top of the temple, too. Almost like a little structure on top of the structure there. I can't really make out what that is. Almost looks like a little house or a little room or something.
Yeah.
In here at the Temple of the Olympian Zeus, you have Corinthian style pillars, which are the most ornamental style there is. Let's see here. The Temple of Athena Polias at Priene. It was built between 350 and 330 BC by Pythias. It was of the Ionic order. It was located on the Ionian coast, which is modern-day Turkey. Pythias had a major influence on later generations. So like the Ionian coast, again, that's where you see some of the earliest pre-Socratic philosophers. You had two different early schools, which would be the Ionian and the Eleatic. Eleatic was from Italy, and the Ionian was from Western Turkey. The Temple of Apollo at Didyma. The Temple of Apollo at Didyma was built on the site of two previous sacred temples to Apollo. In 334 BC, the Milesians started building the greatest temple ever constructed. It was built but never finished. Didyma means twin and is located on the Ionian coast. Okay, so here we get the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus. Here's the floor plan. The temple was built around 800 BC. It was completely rebuilt twice after a flood in the 7th century BC, and an act of arson in 356 BC by Herostratus. It was rebuilt a third time and survived 600 years until the Christians destroyed it, and some of the other stones were used for other buildings.
Things been through a lot in this time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Christians came through and did, you know, Alaric the Visigoth came through and destroyed Eleusis, and that was pretty much the end of the Eleusinian mysteries, so.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, guy. Way to ruin the only psychedelic tradition from, you know, surviving out of that area of Greece and the Mediterranean there. So thank you. Actually, Terrence McKenna does a great talk on when he's talking about the Eleusinian Mysteries. He does a good job explaining kind of the history behind it. So that's an interesting listen. You can probably find it on YouTube. But yeah, I mean, screw the Visigoth guy. You know, like, why do they have to come through and ruin? That's BS.
Yeah, watch your mouth.
The city plans of Delphi, and then you can see I have a little arrow pointing to the temple of Apollo. So as you can see, there's some gods that, you know, obviously Zeus, one of the major gods, Apollo, one of the major gods, Athena, major goddess. I mean, you have some of these reoccurring names, obviously, that these were the important figures in ancient Greece. Any questions so far?
No, sir.
Let's see here. Here's the theater at Delphi, which is beautiful. Look at that scenery in the background. It was built in the 4th century BC. It was remodeled a few times, and specifically it was remodeled in 160 BC. It was also worked on for Nero's visit to Greece. So the Roman Emperor Nero, it was kind of, made more beautiful for Nero, apparently.
Is that thing on heavy lockdown, or can a band rent it out?
What do you mean, live at Pompeii or something?
Kinda, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. You probably could do. I mean, I don't know. I should.
That's
say
amazing.
I
don't. Yeah, it's probably on lockdown. I don't think.
Yeah.
They...
Well, I mean, why would they let you do that?
Right.
I don't think they'd let Pink Floyd do that again if they wanted to.
Probably not. But that thing makes the gorge look like the view of my backyard.
If anybody doesn't know what he's talking about, it's the Gorge Amphitheater in Washington, which has a beautiful backdrop.
Might be the best.
You should go there, take some nice pics.
Yeah, I would like to get out there. It's just it's not close. So
I mean, you were kind of out that way when you went hiking those times in Oregon.
Yeah,
you should have made a stop.
I there was a bunch of concerts going on there. I was just going to stay out there for another couple of weeks, but real life grabbed you, and then you forget about your adventures.
Yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You get bogged down in the monotony of the everyday.
Yeah. Sounds like a depressing song.
I mean, let's continue here.
All right. The Temple of Poseidon at Cape Sunion. It was built in roughly 440 BC. This is an artistic rendering of the temple. It was one of the main monuments built during the Golden Age of Athens. There were originally 34 columns, and 15 columns still stand to this day. The columns are of the Doric order. They were 20 feet high, carved out of white marble. The original temple that was there was most likely destroyed by Xerxes I in his invasion of Greece. So again, another reoccurring theme, Xerxes destroyed a lot of the good stuff.
Yes, he did.
But, I mean, that's just what happens.
We need to get a sound bite from that from the 300 movie, Xerxes!
yeah, I mean, it's just, it's tough. It's a tough one.
Well, that's
just history. Like, that's just what, you know, you can't say, oh, screw this guy, because he's just doing his thing. You know, he's protecting his people. He's creating his empire. Mm-hmm. As much as we look down upon it to this day, that's just kind of what was happening back then. And, I mean, the Greeks did the same thing to other people. You know, Alexander the Great did it to a ton of people. You know, it just happened throughout the ancient world like that.
What's the saying? Whoever wins the wars writes the history.
Something like that. I mean, well, we'll just keep it moving here.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. It shows it right there. You win the war, they destroy all of their history, And then they're there to write the new age.
The temple of Aphaia or Aphia. It was built roughly 500 BC on top of an older temple that was built in 570 BC and was destroyed by a fire in 510 BC.
Yeah.
There may have been an even older temple there in the 7th century BC. Numerous female figurines have been found at the site, suggesting cult activity and a connection to the Minoans. You know, so you have these recurring themes with this too. So you have Xerxes, who destroyed a lot of it, either Xerxes, fire, or earthquakes.
Or water.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been water. I mean, you have volcanic activity on Santorini. I think it was at 1600 BC. So yeah, there's some of that stuff, but I'd say it's either Xerxes, fire, or earthquakes, or seismic activity. I mean, those are the major...
Xerxes is at the top.
It's Maurice's favorite. I'm going to get a... we're going to make a new shirt for our merch store. It's Maurice holding up his fist, and it just says, Xerxes! So...
Have you seen 300? Because they say... They scream his name like 100 times. In that
it's
thing.
Been a while.
Yeah. But that's the only thing I remember from the movies is them screaming Xerxes.
Yeah. Let's see here. All right, now we get to the Temple of Apollo at Epicurus at Bassae. It was built in the late 5th century BC. It may have been designed by Ictinus, who was the architect of the Parthenon. Ictinus. It was built on the site of a smaller temple, which was aligned to the north. Most Greek temples were set on an east-west axis. So that's kind of interesting that they did it that way. The temple was the first to use the Corinthian capital. The temple was dedicated to Apollo the Helper. And the exterior columns were of the Doric order, and the interior columns were Ionic. So, so they must have implemented Corinthian somewhere in there, but it sounds like there was different layers that had different orders, so maybe it was something that like evolved over time. Maybe started when they were doing the Doric order stuff, and they continued building all the way till they were, you know, making Corinthian stuff. So let's see here. The Temple of Apollo at Bassae, I don't know how you pronounce that, is covered due to the deteriorating condition of the pillars and structure. The temple is unique in that it has three classical orders of ancient Greek architecture. Due to the fact that it is in the rural area, it may have been protected from conversion or destruction by the Christians. Let's see here. Okay, so this is kind of what the t-shirt I was talking about. I used like four pictures, and this was actually one of them when I was designing that shirt. So the Temple of Apollo at Naxos. The temple was never finished, but began building around 530 BC. Lygdamis was the tyrant of Naxos, who had overly ambitious construction plans. The portara, which is the lintel of the temple, is all that you see that stands. So like just the doorway stands. That's pretty much what you're seeing there. The lintel is decorative, horizontal, ornamental structure that's found over doorways, portals, and fireplaces. In 524 BC, Lygdamis was overthrown by the Spartan army. And portara just means big door or gateway. Like, there's a bunch of different translations I found for portara, but I like to think of it as a portal. The Temple of Zeus at Nemea, located in Peloponnese region of Greece. It was built in 330 BC on the site of an earlier temple from the 6th century BC that burned down. Again, fires. Fires, Xerxes, earthquakes. Yeah. That's going to be a shirt. Xerxes, fires,
it was what's going to get us next.
We're just going to make a million shirts. There's just going to be a billion shirts in the merch store.
Can't go wrong.
Some of the blocks were used to build the foundation of the replacement temple. Three of the columns from the temple have never fallen. One of the last great Doric temples. All right. Here you have a artistic depiction of the Temple of Zeus at Olympia. This is a reconstruction, as you can see. I mean, it looks pretty nice. You've got those thick triglyphs. Looks like it's of the Doric order.
And all that stuff built around it is just to support it?
Yeah, it's just other structures in the area, maybe other buildings for other uses. But, yeah, I mean, imagine tripping in one of these.
Oh, in their heyday, it would be unbelievable.
Imagine, you know, experiencing the Eleusinian Mysteries and then going walking through one of these temples. It'd be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
Okay. The Temple of Zeus was built at the Altis, which is an enclosure that has a sacred grove and open-air altars that date back to the 9th to the 10th century BC. Was between 457, or this was built between 457 and 470 BC. The architect was Libon from Elis, who used the Doric style. There is a debate whether it was destroyed by major earthquakes in 522 or 551 AD, or whether it was intentionally destroyed or possibly even flooded. There you go. There's your flood by Cladios or Cladios. I don't know how you pronounce it. River or tsunami. It housed one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, which was known as the Statue of Zeus. And here I've got a depiction of an artistic depiction of the Statue of Zeus. We did do, actually, I thought that was one of our better episodes a long time ago. I don't know how it holds up now to how, where we are, but we did that Seven Wonders of the Ancient World.
Yeah, it was sweet.
I really liked that episode. That was actually one of your suggestions too. We had a good time. I had a good time researching that one, and I thought we did a good job. So if you're interested, I don't know what episode it is, but you can go back and look for that.
Were they the natural wonders or the?
No, the ancient wonders, the natural wonders.
Oh yeah,
and then there's like the modern wonders.
Yeah, we should do another one of those.
The Statue of Zeus was 41 feet tall. It was built and sculpted by Phidias. In 435 BC, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Okay. The Temple of Hera at Olympia. Here's the floor plan. It was built in 590 BC. And this was destroyed by an earthquake in the 4th century AD. Again, Xerxes, earthquakes, fires.
Well, if you think about it, what else is going to tear these things down?
Yeah.
There's nothing really else.
Well, here's your flood. This thing's flooded in the picture. The Temple of Apollo at Attica. The Temple of Apollo at Attica was built in the 6th century BC. Children from a nearby orphanage discovered the site, which had been drained and landscaped. That's kind of interesting. Okay. Here, this was a beautiful one here. The Temple of Hephaestus. Construction started in 449 BC, and it was not completed until 415 BC. According to historians, it took so long because funds and workers were redirected to the Parthenon. It was built with marble from local Mount Pantelei and is in the Doric order. From the 7th century AD to the 1800s, it was used as a Greek Orthodox church.
Hmm.
Imagine going to church in that thing.
That'd be nice.
Now we get to Eleusis, one of our favorite reoccurring topics on the show. Eleusis is a town in Attica, which was made famous for hosting the Eleusinian Mysteries. The Eleusinian Mysteries were held once a year. That's actually false. I wrote that a long time, but it's twice a year. There's the Lesser Mysteries in the spring and the Greater Mysteries in the fall. And they were held, and once a year, people had to experience the Greater Mysteries, which was the one in the fall, at least once in their life. And they would be initiated into the mystery cults of Demeter or Kor. Eleusis is located on a fertile plain. There's evidence to suggest that Kekion or Kukion, there's people pronounce it different ways, was drank during the Eleusinian Mysteries. And it was obviously a psychoactive concoction. Some, you know, people have different takes on this, but it contains, some people say it contains ergot fungus, Claviceps purpurea, which is a precursor to LSD. Others have suggested that it could have been psilocybin or DMT. So you have like the road to Eleusis. So you have like Wasson and all those guys saying basically that it's you know, LSA or the precursor to LSD. Now, the problem with that is there's no ergot fungus can create some pretty bad physiological effects. So they would have had to do something to take all like the toxins out of it that would have been toxic to people. So there's some speculation how they might have done that, but I have yet to see like an actual like scientific study or somebody even trying it, you know? So it's like, it's tough to, but there is some physical evidence. I know, Brian Marescu's book, The Immortality Key, he went and found some sort of physical evidence in some of these chalices and pottery and stuff of this. So that's a possibility. We just had Matthew Clark on, who's written about this. And, his, you know, we did a Patreon segment with him where he's discussing Eleusinian mysteries. His idea is that, and this is something I've thought about too, Peganum harmala, which would be your MAOI, and then you have phalaris grass, and you have a lot of other DMT-containing plants in that area. You do have, again, that Eleusinian Mysteries talk that Terence McKenna gave, and he's might have suggested like mushrooms. I don't think it's that, but he talks about how there's a recipe, and there's four ingredients on the recipe, and one of them's water, and he suggests that the water is actually an augum, which means something that can just be replaced with anything else. So there's that hypothesis. Look, mushrooms grow everywhere. DMT could have been a possibility. They grew wheat. So, I mean, the wheat makes sense in terms of the mythology too, which would be, you know, we've talked about the story of Demeter and Persephone. Persephone gets taken down into the underworld and then takes a bite of the pomegranate, I believe, before she comes back up. So she has to spend a third of the year in the underworld. So from spring to fall, she's you know, up in the regular world. And then for that winter, she goes down. You know, that's the cycle of grain or harvest. And we know Claviceps purpurea grows on the harvest or the grain. So, again, that makes sense from that and from, like, an agrarian cult standpoint.
Yeah.
Here's a cave found at Eleusis, the Plutonian Caves. Again, here, I'll get to this. So the Eleusinian, Eleusis Plutonian and the Eleusinian Mysteries. The cave is in Eleusis, Greece. It was built in the 6th century BC at the northeast base of the Acropolis, where two caves are naturally formed in the rock face. The site is known for being associated with the Eleusinian Mysteries and the cults of Demeter and Persephone. Persephone and Kor, who is the daughter of Zeus and Demeter, was abducted and taken to the underworld by Hades, or Pluto, known by both names. Persephone then became queen of the underworld. She would return to the surface every spring. Persephone had to spend a third of the year in the underworld with Hades eating some of the pomegranates. Again, she ate the pomegranate seeds. Persephone was the personification of the agrarian cycle. Her central myth served as the context for the sacred rites and rituals and regeneration, along with the rites known as the Aporeta or the Unrepeatables, which were performed in the Telesterion. If you saw me, you know, earlier in the episode when I had that background, that's the Telesterion, so you can go back and check that out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Demeter made the earth barren every winter and every year until she saw Persephone return, then spring emerged. So the smaller cave contains an opening with a rock stairway that leads outside the Plutonian enclosure to a deep pit. It is associated with cult rituals of the Eleusinian Mysteries. The larger of the two caves held a 4th century BC rectangular temple. This cella, or cella, replaced the earlier structure from the 6th century BC in dedication to Pluto. Reliefs found nearby are related to Pluto and Persephone, who would descend and ascend into the underworld each year. Plato participated in the Greater Mysteries. Plato wrote his dialogue, the Phaedo, when discussing immortality and the soul. Socrates says, "Our mysteries had a very real meaning. He that has been purified and initiated shall," I can't read that last part here that I wrote. Oh, there we go. "Dwell with the gods." So he, yeah, again, this is the quote. "Our mysteries had a very real meaning. He that has been purified and initiated should dwell with the gods." So I asked the question, was the Eleusinian Mysteries and the cave the inspiration for Plato's cave? I mean, the psychedelic experience mixed with these caves could have been the inspiration for Plato's cave.
Yeah, that's a
major paradigm shift. I mean, you have to think that that's the biggest paradigm shift somebody like Plato's had. I mean, we're going to discuss this a lot more in the future, and we've discussed it a lot in the past, but where are these gods in day-to-day consciousness? Where are these gods in day-to-day life? Do they just not exist anymore? I don't think that's the case. I think that they were either entities found in altered states, like, you know, even the oracle from Delphi. The oracle at Delphi was supposedly inhaling, you know, psychoactive gas coming from the ground.
Yeah. What about
Go ahead.
I was gonna. What about like Laird's theory that as time goes on, we get closer to the gods?
Yeah. See, I don't discount anything. I'm just going by what I know, and what I know is the world around me, and all
we're in the bad flux, according to him. So we're not very connected to the spirituality at the time.
I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying. I mean, is that my theory or hypothesis? No. I mean, I like listening to Laird. I think he's an interesting writer and speaker, and I think he's got some really interesting things to say on the topic for sure. But my personal hypothesis is all this stuff comes from altered states of consciousness, whether it be psychoactive compounds, meditation, you know, lucid dreaming, sleep paralysis. I mean, there's a million things you can go to. I think psychedelics is the most interesting one because you can still interact with the world in your waking state of consciousness. So you can literally walk around and interact with the world in an altered state of consciousness, which you can't do while you're sleeping or meditating or any of the other ones.
But there is a undescribable amount of people now being separated from spirituality. Why is that so? I don't know. But people are doing psychedelics and things at a highest.
My question to you would be then, why do you think that that's the case? Like, where in history have you seen that again? At what point in history do you see that? Or is it because we're lifting the veil now and through science, technology, philosophy, all these things, we're understanding things at a higher rate than we ever have before?
Oh, I'm not in the camp of that we're understanding things. I think that when the deeper we look and the more we analyze the atom, we're looking in the wrong direction.
Well, okay.
I think that humanity has lost some kind of synchronization with each other. And I believe in science. I'm a big science guy. But at the same time, there's a spiritual.
It's another shirt. I'm a big science guy.
Bill Nye's X'd on the back. No, but the bottom line is, I think that humanity now is missing some kind of spirituality, a togetherness, if you will, and
I'm not debating that we're missing. Look, I think we all need something greater to believe in. I don't know, it could be the universe, it could be, you know, a creator, it could be. I think my point is, if you look at like all the religions, all the mythologies, all the stuff, where are these gods? Because it's happened throughout all of history. If you want to point to a golden age and say, look at this, look at what they did here, well, then what happened throughout all the other history where there's gods too? You're not making sense logically.
You can only see the written history of the time. Again, we don't know how far back humanity has went.
No, I know,
on that.
But my point again is, you can go back to Göbekli Tepe. You know, there's anthropomorphic structures there Okay. And then you see, like, let's just say, let's go back to like Malta or some Neolithic Europe. You start to see gods and goddesses pop up and rituals and different things. That goes on until we still have gods and goddesses. So again, where are these gods and goddesses? And my theory or hypothesis is that it's all metaphysics is based on altered states of consciousness.
Well, right. And I think it helps.
I think it helps propel humanity forward and helps us evolve. But I don't think it's something that we experience in day-to-day consciousness.
Well, I think you can experience it if you know the right techniques. But my point is, there's one thing that every single person has either contemplated or feels deep down within themselves, and that there is some kind of creator or there is some kind of overpowering energy or God. I mean, the term God now is so taboo and so destroyed that you can't even say it without people...
It means something different to everybody. Like there's
right,
not...
but you say God, people instantly think of big gray man and sitting in the sky, and their eyes glaze over. So it's like,
yeah, they think of like a Zeus looking character,
right? But now you want to stay away from that term God, but it's stupid because a God it doesn't mean gray beard in the sky. I mean that's a Christianity, you know, that's a
well.
That's
I mean, if you were to ask me, I would say Western... it would be like almost like a I don't even know. Like it would be like a primordial energy thing or something that connects us all, or like panpsychism, something like that. I wouldn't think of it as an entity within this realm. And let's say there is something that created us, it would be outside of this realm. So you wouldn't really you wouldn't really feel the influence like on a day-to-day consciousness level. You have to escape mind escape. You have to escape your consciousness to figure out what this thing is, because it's like consciousness. I don't think we're
ever... Yeah, but my argument is you don't need to figure out what this thing is. Why do you have to figure out what this thing is? We're here. We're alive. We didn't come out of thin air. So there must have been some kind of creation at some point in our evolution.
Well, it depends on what you think. I mean, there's speculation that the universe came from a tiny particle that...
Where'd that particle come from, bro?
Exactly. I mean, that's the argument. We could philosophize about this all night long.
And I'm not talking about the banned particle.
I think that you're not being honest with yourself when we're talking about gods and goddesses and stuff, in the sense that I don't know... Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know anybody that even believes in those things that has had an actual, like, real encounter that you would be like, wow, that's crazy. Even... We could point to like modern day UAP stuff. People, you know, like there's videos of these things. So there's a little bit different when you're talking about things that you can't see or explain, and then things that you actually have data and sensory data on and stuff like that. So I guess I'm not arguing with you because, you know, I've gone through my own spiritual awakening stuff, and I'm not trying to be critical, but I do want the truth. I do want answers, and I'm not just going to believe something just to believe it. I'm going to think critically and use logic and reason and try and get at some sort of answer. So my whole point is, again, I think all this stuff is just based on altered states of consciousness, and through those altered states of consciousness, we use our brains in different ways and come up with better ideas or more artistic and creative ideas. And I don't think that that means that there's not anything else out there. I just don't think that you can achieve that on a day-to-day, daily grind basis. I mean, do you experience God when you're, you know, riding your bike or taking photos?
Depends on what your definition of God may be.
Or gods or goddesses.
To me, God means a purpose in life. So yes, I do encounter that day-to-day because I know my purpose. A lot of people don't have that purpose, and they think that life is a fruitless venture, if you will.
But I don't think you've ever entertained the idea that that might not be the case and there might not be anything else out there. And I don't
know,
think...
because deep down in my gut, that's the feeling that I have.
Okay, cool. Let me just get what I'm getting at here. We're getting a little heated here, and I like it. I like what's going on here because this opens up some real dialogue. But yeah. When we're talking about these things, unless you've contemplated the idea that there is nothing, and I'm talking about really contemplated, not like thought like, oh, what if this is it kind of a thing, but like really looked at it hard, I don't think you can say you're being truthful to yourself and truthful to the idea of truth, because you haven't even really entertained this idea. Whether you believe it or not, you haven't really entertained it, in my opinion.
I've entertained the idea, but I think all the way back to the first particle, and I can't wrap my head around something coming out of nothing.
Okay. And that's fair. And I'm that's all I'm trying to say, though, is until, I mean, is it Aristotle that said the sign of a truly intelligent person is somebody that can entertain an idea without believing it or something along those lines. And I think that, you know, for me, it's like I do a lot of thought experiments. I put myself in those positions and I truly immerse myself in it. And that's why some days I think we're living, breathing magic. Some days I think that we're just really evolved, intelligent animals that can manipulate our environment. And then other days, I think that there's way more to life and we have to figure this out through symbols.
Yeah, but why can, even if we are living, breathing magic, why can't we be the animal thing too? Why can't it be a combination of all of them?
Oh, I mean, it's life is magical in itself. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying in terms of the, like us being, I think what I mean is most people think as humans is we are different from the animal.
Well, that's something that's been implemented into religion that's been so skewed because of man wants religion to support.
Well, that's where I would agree.
I don't know about all that. I mean, when you go backpacking and you hang out with the animals or you're with the rivers and the streams and the ants and all that stuff, you become aware that if you think you're different than the birds, then you're a fool kind of thing. It doesn't mean that you can't find purpose and live your life. But
so that's where I would agree with you, where in terms of like these like golden ages and things like that, I think that because of technology and we're becoming more and more separated with each other through technology, like meaning that it's going to be less face-to-face, more through Skype or text or phone or whatever, maybe even something weird in the future that we don't even know about yet. But my point is, I would agree with you that that's taking us away from the knowledge that we had of our connection to nature and the things that we know about the earth and the sky and the night sky and things of that nature. So I would agree with you that we're losing that. But I would, again, make the argument that even if you were tapped into that, I mean, when I'm in nature, and I'm not often in nature anymore, but when we go camping or hiking or whatever, I do feel some sort of calmness and peace and serenity that I don't feel in day-to-day consciousness. It is like an altered state of consciousness. So again,
well, they've implemented that into new therapies and whatnot. As we see these new psychedelics like, you know, psilocybin and some forms of MDMA being introduced to helping people, now nature is definitely proving itself within the scientific world. Not that we need it to have that label, but people want that label to be able to say, okay, I'm going to take some psilocybin to help with my depression because now doctors are saying that. I get that. It gives it some certification or gives it some validity, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I think we've known that all along. And my whole point is for us as a civilization to rise to the next whatever, we need to join and we need to be spiritual. And whatever that means, spirituality to
that's
me
a
means
problem.
We need to all accept each other.
Let me tell you why that's a problem. It's the same thing as saying God. There is no one. You can't join with people when everybody has a different idea of what that thing is.
Well, I think that's a problem too. I'm not Joe religion where it's like you have to believe my religion or it's my way or the highway. I think there's a interlining thread that sews a lot of these religions together. It's all the nitty gritty bull crap that separates us and makes us want to kill each other and start wars over this kind of stuff. If we can look past that.
No,
I don't think it's an easy task. Obviously, we've been fighting each other.
I agree with that, but you're not answering the questions. Where are these gods and goddesses? there
is no god or goddess.
Well, but that's what the ancient people are saying. That's what some of these religions are saying. That was my whole point of this whole thing is, you know, I think that all that stuff is based off in metaphysics and all that stuff is based on altered states of consciousness.
I didn't want to say it, bro. The vibrations.
It's going to be, next picture is going to be me arm wrestling Maurice and it's going to say, give in.
No, but what you're saying, I think we might be arguing part of the same point with your altered state of consciousness. That's an altered vibrational state. And
yeah,
when your frequency is tuned into something different, then you can rise to the next level. And that's where I think the spirituality will come into play. Forget religion, forget gods and goddesses. Because to me, the vibration
Mr. Vibrations. I'm going to put some sunglasses on that Let Maury Speak t-shirt. It's just going to be some Ray-Bans on that face.
Call me Brian Wilson because I'm living some vibrations here.
It's just going to be called Mr. Vibrations. We are agreeing on some of these things. I'm just making the point that, you know, this idea of spirituality, again, that means different things to different people. And I'm fine with that too. I'm not saying it has to mean one thing. But if you think that people are going to all get on one page, I don't think that's going to happen unless
you don't think that's possible to have everybody at sooner or later down the road.
You would need everybody to just agree that everybody's got a different point of view on it, and everybody would have to respect each other's points of view on it. Have you seen that happen on the internet? Because I haven't.
Well, I'm not talking about them, but for me, when I get into an argument with, let's say, you or my girlfriend or anybody, I like to take a step back and go, look. First of all, the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, and we've talked about this on other episodes. So I take a step back. It's like, I see it this way. Let me try and understand the way that she's seeing it. But if more people started to take this approach, but not to blow smoke up my butt, but I think that I'm more of an elevated person than 50%, maybe 75% of the people out there.
You're already putting yourself above others. That's not very spiritual of you.
I'm using it to prove a point. I'm not going to go on to Facebook. First of all, the people that are putting people down for creating art in any capacity are usually the people that don't create anything to begin with. Don't you agree?
Yeah, let's get off this, though, because this is going in a completely different direction.
Well, we could go down this rabbit hole all day long. But
we keep talking about what we're talking about, but I'm saying when you start talking about, you know, apps and creativity. And
no,
stuff.
You're talking about the people on the internet that are putting people down. I'm trying to compare it to
that.
I'm
saying that when you talk to people about spirituality, everybody's got their own idea. Therefore, people will always debate and argue and have dialogue. I mean, dialogues would be civil and that should be what happens. But usually you see it devolve into fighting and name calling and all sorts of things. So my whole point is we would need to get to a place where everybody's personal spirituality is what's respected, and it doesn't matter about believing in one way truth or one truth, because let's be honest, there might not be some objective truth. There might be objective truth in terms of the material world and what is or isn't and things like that, but in terms of like the mind and philosophy of the mind and how your mind works and cognitive biases and things like that, we might not all be able to arrive at the same thing anyways. So
right, but well, like my truth might not be your truth, but that's what my point was to sum this up, is if you can step back and look at it like that and accept people, it's almost exciting to see. I like that aspect of other people. It's like, you don't agree with me and you don't see it my way. That's cool to me. That's exciting. I'm not going to fight you over it.
No, I agree.
I'm not talking about, we used to have kids that would get into straight up arguments about religion. It's like, why don't you can think your way. I'm going to think my way, but I like some of the stuff that your religion has. I like some stuff that these other religions have. But a lot of these hardcore dudes would be like, if you dabble with that other religion, then you can't be this one religion. That's where I really put my foot down, and that's why I don't like some religions, most religions, because they say you have to stay within the confines of this religion. If you dabble with Buddhism, you're out. If you dabble with Hinduism,
see, that's,
you're out. That's horseshit.
Again, I'm saying my whole thing is just do away with – I'm not saying – everybody can believe what they want, but to achieve what I'm talking about and what you are supposedly talking about, humanity's – had at some point, I find it hard to believe. I just think it's been different civilizations that reach a pinnacle that have, you know, their stuff in order, and I think it shows through their artwork and megalithic structures and things like that. I don't think it was some, you know, cohesive thing on Earth or whatever. So,
but just because they back in the day there was more spirituality doesn't mean that everybody was fully agreeing upon it. They just had more of a mystical, spiritual side to them.
And again, I'm fine with that. Like I said, we were talking about like entheogens and stuff like that. The mystical aspects of those entheogens and rituals and things like that are what I've found helpful for my issues. And I don't know if that's the same for everybody. That's why I'm all about options and different tools for everybody. There should be different stuff on the table for different people. Maybe
absolutely
entheogens that have no psychoactive compounds to help people, or have it, or people talking about these psilocybin patches and all sorts of different things. So I'm all for all different options for all different people, whatever works for you. I guess that's my philosophy, but everybody would have to have that philosophy for everybody to, it would need to be a lot more healthier in that regard. And with the way everything's going right now in the world, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree.
But it should be the case, but I mean, look, we started the show Mindscape. That was the goal, was to bring people together through us learning and going on this knowledge quest and, you know, putting some of these pieces together. And it just seems like things have gotten a little bit worse. So, but we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. I can only control myself and my own thoughts and philosophies and stuff like that, and evolve myself and hope that everybody around us evolves their consciousness and, you know, can find that within themselves. So
my one last thought would be, maybe back in the day too, there was less people altogether. So especially during those Dogen times, don't you think it would be easier to have a cohesive consensus about one particular thing if there's just less people altogether?
Yeah. I mean, if you have less people, yeah, you know, and back in the day, you know, you had some wise people that I have no doubt were able to convince other people that they were either right or onto something. And now, you know, you have Dunning-Kruger effect run amok on the internet. Everybody can look up anything and everybody thinks they're an expert. So I think that that's one of the problems that we see now, is we're not looking to wise people for answers because everybody thinks they're the wise person because of the internet. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When social media went down the other day for a little bit, I was praying. I was like, if this stays gone, this could be the best thing ever.
Well, I was just thinking the other day, too. I was thinking what life was like before the internet. I mean, we just, back in the day, we just used the internet to, like, make CDs from, like, LimeWire and Napster and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you didn't use it for that. Like, I just remember, like, calling your friend, and if they weren't there, they weren't there. You couldn't, you know, they didn't have a cell phone. So it's like, was so-and-so home? No. Okay. You call the next day, hey, you want to do something? Sure. And you just assumed that that person wasn't going to show up. You didn't get a last-minute text saying, oh, I can't make it, or something came up. You know, if somebody said that they were going to do something, there was a good chance that they were going to do it. So.
Same thing with going out. Your parents couldn't get a hold of you. When you were gone, you were gone. Seriously, there's no answering. Yeah. I mean,
I remember
it's cool
we
to have a
pagers
kid,
too,
but...
like paging, like, you know, call home or
whatever. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, those were the days. And I think
I'm glad that we were a part of that, because we've had a taste of both worlds. And right. At least there was that simpler time that we got to enjoy. So I think that's actually pretty cool that we kind of went through the transition of it all. Like, we were at the beginning of, you know, AOL and stuff like that. So we got to see the transition.
And I think that there is a benefit to seeing both sides of that I don't think future generations might not have, you know, having that perspective of what it's like with all this crazy technology that we have now at our fingertips, and then what it was like to not have it. Even though there was some technology, it wasn't like, you know, the pinnacle or the thing that we did all day long, you know, so...
Yeah, but then at the same time, I feel like I'm like my dad, and it's like, well, my music was the best. And
well, that's always how it's going to be. Everybody gets older. Everything changes. The next generation.
And that's how your kid's going to think about you.
That's how it all is. Yeah, but I do think there is timeless. You know, there's a reason why we talk about Plato and Socrates and some of the great ancient thinkers. And, you know, you have Lao Tzu and... you know, you can go back to any parts of the ancient world and there's wise people that had interesting things to say. And, you know.
Well, it's funny, too. Like, I picture myself back in those times and to see how the people interacted. And for some reason, just because it's ancient, I always feel like they were way more serious. So it would be interesting to go back there and just see if it was
like,
just straight
like Bill
serious.
And Ted's, you go back, you're wearing a toga.
Yeah. But did they talk like this? Did they have... Obviously, they didn't talk,
they didn't
like,
talk
this,
like this.
But did they talk like? Did they jest? Did they hang out? Did
well,
they
you have to think.
Do that
depends.
Kind of stuff?
Early, I mean, the earliest forms of writing were, I think, cuneiform, 3400 BC, and then you have Egyptian hieroglyphs coming along at 3200 BC. And language was like the technology back then. So where we might have like an iPhone now, that was the thing back then, and that you had to think that's, you know, that really, really altered consciousness. Because we're not just talking like phones, even though it's this crazy technology and tool, you still have to use language through it, right? But imagine inventing language. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
That's still like the main thing there. That's the massive, you know, I think that's why different cultures too have different, you know, takes and consciousnesses too, is because different languages alter the way you think about things to some regard, so...
There was also a way more serious atmosphere. Obviously, you kept saying earthquake. So
just to live. I think now we have a lot. We have a lot more freedom. We have houses. We have food in the supermarkets and stuff like that. So we can spend more time jesting. We can spend more time hanging out and talking about whatever. Back then, it was either eat or be eaten, or avoid the fire. Xerxes.
Yes, or no, the earthquakes. Xerxes, earthquakes, or fires. choose your poison.
Your adventure.
Shout out to Taz. Thank you so much. You've been a huge support, and we love you. I want to give a shout out to new Patreon member Azrael too. Shout out to you. You're awesome. We love you. And shout out to all of our Patreon members. We love you all. And shout out to Sandy and the crew. And yeah, I mean, again, I think that these are fascinating conversations, and I love, you know, talking about this stuff and having a dialogue on these things. But, you know, again, I think that we all just have to understand that everybody's got a different mindset and philosophy and cognitive biases and, you know, all these different things that affect them on a day-to-day, you know, basis. So we just have to be mindful of that. And yeah.
Well, we pretty much demonstrated the exact same thing that we were arguing, because you have one idea, I have another idea, so it was a good portrayal of real life with that. But I accept your views, and
my argument was just that where are something that's so prevalent, it has been so prevalent since the dawn of civilization, you know, and it's been hugely influential on who we are to this point. Where are these influences, these gods and goddesses and, you know, religions, and like where are these, where did these ideas come from?
I don't think you need to say god and goddesses. I think god, that's the other portrayal of the word god. It means a man in the sky. I think god means an energy source. So it can't be a man or a woman.
You're thinking now, you're only thinking monotheism. You're only thinking of people that believe in one god. There's tons of cultures that believe in multiple gods and goddesses. So.
But I still chalk it up to one essential energy source of them all.
Yeah, that's you. Again, but there's religions that still believe there's gods and goddesses and multiple gods, pantheon of gods. There's people, you know, this isn't something of the ancient days. This exists now. I hope you realize that.
Oh, yeah.
So
I do.
So that's what I'm saying is, like, you're not right. It's the same thing what you were saying. So you're not for sure right. That's just your idea of it.
Right. But I could be right for my own life.
Well, that's just it, and that brings up a better question, almost like relativism. Yeah. What are you doing right now? Are you wiping your screen or something?
Yeah, I gotta clean something off.
Yeah, you better clean up that face, dog. So, yeah, again, that's what it comes down to, in my opinion. I'm just asking the questions here because I'm interested, and I would like to know what people think. I mean, if somebody's got a different take on this conversation or debate, leave us a comment down below, or find us on Discord or Twitter. So, but yeah, let's wrap it up there. Before we wrap it up, I just want to get your take. I think the whole thing we were just discussing kind of ties into what we were discussing with the megalithic structures and temples, and why they built these structures and temples, and who were these people that they built them for, and things like that. I guess my take is really evolved since then. While we've definitely had more of an alternative mindset coming into this podcast, I think I've definitely found some sort of middle ground where I like some academic takes, some, you know, in the middle takes, some alternative takes. It just depends on the topic. But I think until you have the basis of what we actually know through science and archaeology and anthropology, and then you mix that with, you know, some of the alternative stuff to find the blind spots within those fields, I don't think you can truly say that you have a full perspective or truth on these topics. So, I mean, science is always going to science, you know, an alternative is always going to alternative. You just got to find if you're actually after truth, you can't just, you know, put all your eggs in any of those baskets.
Science is right until it's wrong, and it's proven itself wrong over and
over. It's not wrong. It just evolves. That's the picture at that moment. It can be wrong too. You know, people could put forth something that's wrong, and then it gets debunked later on by other scientists, or the timeline gets pushed back, or, you know, they find new evidence for something else, or, you know, those, it's like Göbekli Tepe. It was like a massive paradigm shift because the previous older oldest stuff was like, you know, the cave in Malta that's 5,000 years old, or those tombs in France that are like 5,000 years old. You know, like those were all the oldest things previous to that. And those are 5,000 years after Göbekli Tepe. So I don't know. That's just, and the other idea I think about sometimes is, are we the gods? Were there just humans that were exemplary humans in some capacity, or had some sort of creativity, or were excellent at something that they did, where they were just immortalized? You know, that's
yeah, a that's a good point, because we immortalize a lot of these people in our society right now.
Right. So that's another, you know, thing to think about. But
again, I like to go with the truth probably lies in between all of it, because if you immortalize somebody, let's say like a Paul McCartney or something, and then in 1,000 years from now, he might be the god of music, something like that. Because think about what you have to go by. Obviously, now there's way more information and the internet and this.
Here's my
problem.
Here's my problem with that, though. All it takes is a solar flare. Boom, done. Technology doesn't even matter.
I'm saying if someone chiseled into a rock, this guy is a god of like.
Yeah, if they chiseled into a rock,
music,
yeah.
And then over time, people just heard McCartney, and then they associate him with being a god of music.
Well, here's how I used to think about all this stuff. I used to just think they were building temples based on the myths, and I used to not even really think about where those myths came from. But you look at like the history of ancient Greece, and you have the mythology, and you have like Homer and all that stuff, and then you have Thales, who's the first philosopher come along, and he says, no, there's an actual natural explanation for this, you know? Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, we can go through a lot of the stuff, but I think one of the things is Thales was able to take advantage of the situation because, for instance, he saw during the rainy seasons that more olives would be produced. Okay. People didn't really think about this before. So he went through the next time there was a rainy season, and before the season was up, he bought all the olive presses. So he had all the olive presses. So when people needed to, you know, press the olives at the end of the, you know, the season, they had to come to him, and he had all the machines. So that's him using science and natural philosophy to take advantage of the situation. It wasn't because of Zeus or Demeter or whatever. It was because he knew that there was a natural explanation for it, you know, and there was things that he got wrong. I think he thought that magnets had souls and they don't. It's just magnetism we know now, you know, but back then that's not a, you know, that wouldn't be that weird to think about. But it's, again, there's certain things that people evolve through thought over time. So I don't know. I look at things like that, but I look at like that transition from mythology to natural philosophy or science. And I think that science can be super beneficial. It is super beneficial in a lot of ways, but I do think you need philosophy to balance it out, because scientism is a real issue. And you have people that think that just the scientific method is where it's at, or peer review. But again, the people that are doing those things are people too that do have cognitive biases themselves. So you just have to kind of filter through all that as well.
Yeah.
But it is where we're at. This is where we're at. And I think that we've really evolved. If you look at some of our first episodes, which I cringe, I can't even listen or watch them now, but
they're a good time. Just relax.
But that's the whole point of the show, is to like evolve our thinking and thoughts and everything like that. And I think that, again, we got into this thing and started doing this podcast from like a spiritual and alternative standpoint. And for me, again, I'm looking at all angles now. I'm looking at the academic stuff, the alternative stuff, the in-between stuff, anything that's interesting on these topics that somebody has something to say that has some sort of basis to it or is steeped in logic and reason, I'm all for it. So
yeah,
well, let's wrap it up here. Again, we have some amazing merch and shirts now in our Mind Escape Tee Public store, so you can either go to mindescapepodcast.com, click on the merch button, or I have the link down below as well. Head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. Again, I just uploaded some, you know, with Dr. Rick Strassman, Laird Scranton, Matthew Clark, discussing the Eleusinian Mysteries, We uploaded one with Laura, the Megalith Hunter, discussing Malta. So lots of great stuff up there. Is, you know, there's way more stuff. I don't even know how many we have up there now. There's probably 50 or 60 segments by now. So go check that out. And we are on Discord as well if you want to come find us on Discord. One more thing, head on over to indrasweb.org. It is live. This is a social media platform we created to connect open minds. So if you want to speculate, hypothesize, theorize about all the stuff we've been discussing, go check that out. And one more thing, we are giving away this t-shirt at the end of October. If you are interested, all you have to do is go to our podcast on Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, and send an email to mindescapepodcast@gmail.com, and I will submit you for the giveaway. And that is it. So, great conversation. I'm glad Maurice talked toward the end. We need to get him a Let Maurice Speak t-shirt, which we do have in the merch store.
Yeah, baby.
It's an outline of this guy.
Yeah.
And I will be creating one with sunglasses on that says Mr. Vibrations. So go check that out. But we love everybody. Stay safe out there. And we're going to do the Mysteries of Metaphysics 4.4 will be on all the other megalithic structures we've discussed so far on the show since the beginning. And then 4.5 will be ancient Egypt, and then we'll move on to the other topics. At, you know, part 5 and part 6 will be on other things, not megalithic structures. So look for that. But we love everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will catch you next time. Peace. You gonna say peace or
peace? Yeah.